I think we sometimes get discouraged about like our numbers, you know, but actually our unique identity is each creators, they have different value proposition, right? Like you have your architecture background, for example, if you want to do like content creation or sponsorship in the future. So you can relay on that note with brands. So everybody has something to offer. So you shouldn't worry so much about the numbers, but maybe like enhance what you have and enhance your value proposition. So when you do pitch to the brand, they can see you, oh yeah, this person is actually unique and I like to work with her, with them, with him, because you know you're only one you and you speak to larger crowd or something like that.
This is your host, Dyutima, but you can call me DJ. And I love to inspire food photographers to dream. I spent 15 years as an architect studying buildings and constructing hospitals before taking the biggest leap of faith of my life, which was setting up a food styling and food photography business right from scratch. If you're a dreamer like me, wanting to start a new photography business or grow your existing food photography business, jump right into a world where I share practical, actionable strategies to improve your photography skills, to work with clients, make more money, all with a fearless mindset. This is the My Food Lens podcast, and we take you one step closer to your dreams. So let's go. Welcome to another episode of the My Food Lens podcast. And I think you're just absolutely going to love this series that we are creating with our guest today. Her name is Em Aimee, and she is a food photographer, videographer, recipe developer. She's based in Canada. And boy, she's going to throw some light on content creation for social media. This topic is so close to our hearts. I think you're going to have a blast because we're going to talk about the kind of content that the current climate of social media is, you know, seeing or requiring from us creators, how to price for it, how to pitch for it, how to find clients that are a right fit, and also whether we need a media kit or we don't need a media kit. Who are these brands, whether they are present globally or locally, and also about turning these brand partnerships into repeat clients, into long-lasting relationships. We are going to deep dive into everything related to social media, content creation for social media, creation of sponsored posts, and also partnerships with big and small brands. Em is an absolute genius when it comes to the way she has curated her social media presence around these profitable, lucrative way of partnering with brands, using her passion for photography in the most, you know, efficient and yet most creative way to grow her business, but also grow her network, her relationships, and build a more credible name in the world of food photography. So let's welcome Em and let's get this conversation started. Here we go. Hi, Em, and welcome to My Food Lens podcast. It's such a delight and an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, DJ. It's finally a dream come true to speak with you in person. So I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't wait for this. I mean, we've known each other for so long on social media. It's such a pleasure.
Yeah, we do.
But I have to share something with you before we start this episode. So, Okay. You know, every time I'm on social media and I'm scrolling and I see your photos, there is this sense of warmth that I really see in your photography. And, you know, whether it's your photos or it's your videos, it's very heartwarming. There's a sense of, you know, a person can really relate to it. You can transport somebody. You make it so genuine. You know, there is something so relatable about it. So when I am having that experience with your photos or your videos, I suddenly realize, oh my God, that is a sponsored post. Oh, that is promoting a brand. Wow. Not many people can do it so beautifully, so gently, and with such elegance. Like, I feel you have such a unique talent, which is why I thought you would be the perfect person to come and talk to us about this. So really, I wanted to give this snapshot to our listeners because they should know that you have such a unique style of, you know, doing this kind of work. So we're going to get into all of that. But before that, we are a very educational podcast, but we are also a very fun podcast. So we are going to start with something very, very fun. And then we're going to get into all the serious stuff. So we would love for you to, you know, share something fun, something that we may not know about you to begin.
Oh my goodness. After that glowing words from you, I don't know how to recover. I don't know. I stumble on like this first question, you know, how fun you are. Like, yeah. I have to describe myself as a fun person. Like, to be honest, I don't know. I mean, I'm just a regular person who loves to eat, who loves to cook. Like, you know, like the story always starts with like what you like, what you love, right? And you share your passion. And then it's developed from there to something else that, you know, becoming fun and more than fun, because now you have to deal with real life and this is becoming my job now, right? But aside from doing like content and food photography, videography and all that stuff that comes with it, I genuinely enjoy cooking and eating, and I enjoy learning a lot about food from traveling, from people all over the world. Just because you can learn so much from other people, like how they eat, like why certain ingredients are available in certain places and all of that. And I also love like a long walks in the park, in nature. I find that is really inspiring for me to just like recoup all the energy, all the inspiration after spending some time in the studio. What else? I love antiquing. I don't know if that, like, I'm not an adrenaline chaser, obviously. I'm not like those like roller coaster types of person, yeah, but
or bungee
yeah,
jumping.
I enjoy like blasting my radio like really loudly, especially classical music. I know it's
nice.
I'm an old soul. And then just like doing something fun while like listening to music, listening to podcasts, your podcasts.
Woohoo!
Yeah, especially when I'm doing my chores that I hate and I'm listening to your podcast.
See, that's why that's why we called you on the podcast, so you can say all the nice things about us. But this is,
I love your podcast. No, it's very helpful.
You are saying all the nice things. You're saying all my favorite things: food and being in nature, and running and walking. Like, for me, it's running in nature. Yeah. For you, it's walking and music. Oh my god.
Yeah, for me, it's walking. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Sometimes you just like, yeah, it's just amazing to just be. Sometimes music can carry you away to a different place. And, you know,
absolutely. I think that's
a definition of fun for me.
Yeah. 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 Love it. Love it. Love it. So we've started with all our favorite things. I love it. So let's talk a little bit about all the serious stuff. Or maybe not so serious.
Okay.
Not so serious for you. So tell us a little bit. You told us what you do in your free time, or, you know, what is your life outside of work? So what is your life inside of work? A little snapshot of, you know, maybe the kind of projects you do, the kind of client commitments you have, just a snapshot of that.
Okay, so I am a food photographer and also videographer now, content creator, recipe developer, and also a stylist. I work with brands, so consumer packaged brands or restaurants, different kinds of clients to basically elevate their brands and, you know, help them in marketing themselves, because nowadays, you know, social medias and websites, they're like the forefront of marketing. So they need to have like a powerful and captivating image for their brands to be taken seriously, right? So that's where my help is needed, I think, and I enjoy doing that. So that's a little bit about what I do for work. Is there anything specific that you'd like to know
like
more?
What would be the kind of clients you usually work with? Are they food and beverage brands? Are they restaurants? What would be the general profile of your clients?
Yeah. So currently most of my clients, they are food and beverage brands. So consumer packaged brands, meaning like, you know, the stuff that you'll see on the grocery stores or alcoholic beverages that you'll see in Canada. We have like a specific liquor store that you go to. Mm-hmm. I also work with upcoming brands, like local brands who are just emerging and they're trying to get their products out there, maybe through like a trade shows or something like that. And then they'll need like marketing assets to do their campaigns. And yeah, so, and then I also do content creations for, I know like this podcast is about sponsorship, but I also do like content creations for brands who are global and also international. So for example, sometimes like nowadays, like, you know, as Instagram and TikTok is becoming a crucial element in every brand's marketing strategy. Maybe they want a follower, maybe they want like a inspirational content. So I help them with that. I create the content for them. But aside from that, I also create images and videos and recipes for sponsors, for sponsor content.
Sponsored posts?
Sponsored posts. Yeah. The brands vary from local brands to global retailer, global brands. Yeah. That's so it's all over the place.
No, but it has to be. That's the world we live in.
Yeah.
We are in the digital age. And it's so encouraging for someone who's sitting in India right now to think that they can work with an American brand, and someone who's sitting in America to think that they can work with an Australian brand. I think that's fantastic. So, Em, when you started out, did you have content creation and sponsored posts? So we are going to cover everything. I just wanted to clarify because you said that this our episode, like, I would want to focus our conversation around everything that has to do with brands and social media related content.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, when you started out, did you have this in mind that, okay, I will have sponsored post services or I will offer content creation kind of services to clients? Did you start there or did that eventually get added to your list of services?
I think it eventually added to my list of services. In the beginning, you know, I was just having fun, you know, like posting on Instagram or whatever, like just for fun, you know, just sharing what I like to do. And then I think a brand approaches me for, this was like a few years ago when like you don't do collaboration unless you're a celebrity or something. So like the brand partnership at the time was, you know, product exchange or something like that.
Right.
And I remember at the time, it was a Dutch cast iron pan brand that I really, really like. And it's expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was back like maybe in 2017 or 2016. And I was like, oh, this is expensive stuff, you know, like, and they actually like what I do, what I post, like random stuff about food. And they're like, oh, why don't you work with us? We'll send you like a cast iron pan for you to cook something, whatever you like. And then like, you know, we'll feature you or we'll like tag us on the post, something like that. So, you know, like, I guess long time ago, like exposure and like free exchange were the norms, right? So I was like, okay, why not? Like, you know, I have nothing to lose. I get like a good product that I couldn't afford it, right? So why not? So it started from there. And then it getting more and more into food photography, because then I realized that, well, I really like, other than cooking, I really like showcasing the food. So I started like developing my skills in food photography. And more brands are getting into my DMs and like, oh, hey, like, are you interested in partnering with us? And things like that. And then I realized that there are opportunities for us as food photographers to go beyond the traditional clients. There are markets in the social media realms for us to go for, you know? So,
So it was an opportunity you saw based on the kind of response that you were seeing from brands. Based on that you were putting out, the kind of content that you were already creating and putting out on social media.
Exactly.
And you thought, why not? You know, why not? And you're talking about 2017 or so. And that time, this whole word of influencer and sponsor post, like these things were still coming up. It wasn't
there
as
was still
much
a new concept.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like depending on where you are in the world, like I know maybe the United States have a head start, you know, with the terms content creator and influencer.
Right.
And I am based in Canada. So Canada is still kind of like catching up to that at that time. And maybe the rest of the world was not aware of that. That's a possibility that you could do with your career and, you know, your job, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that you said that, you know, brands was getting into your DMs and they were approaching you. But were there brands like suddenly when you thought, ah, this is something I could explore, you know, did you start reaching out to brands you wanted to partner with? Did you also do that? Or you were pretty much like responding to the brands that were reaching out to you?
In the beginning, I wasn't very ambitious about, like, you know, going for brands or like chasing after the brands that I like to work with. Because at the time, I truly just like to explore, like, you know, my food diary. I mean, I was in the food blogging phase where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to create food and I'm going to put it out there, see if people like it, and let's go from there. It was interesting to see, like, there are some brands who responded and actually liked my personal touch on my story about food, right? Mm-hmm. So after seeing the patterns, eventually, you know, I feel like, okay, maybe this is something that I could monetize with my social media. My followings were growing. And then I was like, okay, like, maybe it opens up to different opportunities, because, like, you know, as photographers, I think we should put our eggs in different baskets, right? Mm-hmm. Because you never know.
Yeah. Like,
there's so many ways to be creative. So why not? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, like, once you started reaching out to brands, was there any challenge? Did you feel like, oh, wow, I didn't think of this. Oh, that's tough. You know, did you ever get into such situations?
So I think the world of social media content creation have already grown so much from what it used to be in 2017, you know? Like, I mean, I used to see it just as a hobby, but then now, since it's part of my job, you kind of approach it differently. You need to understand that when you are pitching to brands, you're not just pitching to any brands, you know, because imagine if you have to pitch to 1,000 brands to get, like, just a reply, then it will be so tiring, right? So it becomes more strategic in a way that, you know, I like when I pitch to a client or a prospective client, I make sure that first thing first, before even, like, pitching to them, I need to warm the pitch. Meaning that I need to get to understand who they are. You know, as much as you like to work with a brand, you need to know if you like to work with them too, right? Like, it's almost like finding a match.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, are we a good match or not? And then if you think, like, okay, like, you know, seems like this brand is a brand that I can work with, then you start engaging with them first, right? Because you need for them to get familiar with you.
Yeah.
Like imagine if you come up to a stranger and then you ask something from them. And imagine if you ask for your friend for something from them, which one it will be easier, right?
Exactly.
It will be easier if you grab it from someone that you know, and then it feels less awkward. And it doesn't feel very salesy, pitchy, you know? It's more like, okay, the goal of pitching to brand is to build a relationship, to get to know them, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So,
yes. So did you find that challenging? Was that difficult? Like, was
it
a bit tough?
Yeah. Okay. So in the beginning, when I was just cold pitching, because I didn't know, right? And in the beginning, I was like, okay, you know what? I find a brain. I'm just going to cold pitch. That was challenging because most of the time they don't know who I was. They don't even know, like, why do I have to care about this M. Amy person? Like, they don't know who I am. So why should they care? So maybe my pitch went to, I don't know, somewhere like a mail that never been open or something like that. So the successful rate was very low because they don't know who I am, right? So the challenge was in the beginning, motivating myself to keep pitching, but I was pitching the wrong way, not the smart way, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the first challenge. And I mean, pitching in itself is already like a challenge for some people, including me, because, you know, like sometimes we have an imposter syndrome. We sometimes feel like, oh, am I good enough? You know, there are more capable creators that are there to work with this brand. Why would they want to see me? But yeah, so a part of it is like overcoming your own personal doubt and you know,
I have
the voice in your head.
I have a question on this because I'm so passionate. I'm extremely passionate about this whole idea of pitching because I have a
I know you do.
So here's the thing. Like, I can literally feel the listeners like this in their heads right now. So you said that you would, you would warm up to, you would warm the pitch or you would warm up the brand to be able to receive the pitch from you, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that, especially on social media, right? All these brands, a lot of them have agencies running the show. They have a social media agency who is actually...
Exactly.
Yeah. So how did that... Like, did you ever run into problems where you were talking to the wrong person on social media or you were not really being able to warm up? And it was because there is this agency that is between the decision maker and you, you know? So was that a challenge?
Of course. Of course, there would always be different scenarios, right? The most ideal scenario is like when you warm up the brand and then you're actually talking to the person who's in charge of like partnership or sponsorship or whatever work that you can come up with together. In that sense, that's great. But if not, then you can see a pattern, like especially for like global brands. You can tell from like the way they post it. It's very systematic, you know, and then you can tell, oh, this must be an agent, you know, working behind it or something like that. So if that's the case, then I would not spend too much time like trying too hard, you know, to like, hey, I'm here kind of things. So I normally just like slide into their DMs and be like kind of upfront and be like, hey, tell them like my pitch basically, but on DM and be like, oh, can you connect me with the person that is responsible, that is in charge for partnership or something like that. So then you will be, of course, redirected to a person email or something like that. And then you will try your pitch there. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes some lucky times when the brand's like, oh, actually, and sometimes they check your profile and they're like, oh, we actually like what you do. And then they follow you back. Then that's amazing, right? Because then you already built that connections.
Yes.
But if not, sometimes like you do like a pitch and then you didn't hear from the person. Obviously, that would happen. Then I will sometimes follow up with the DM and I'll be like, hey, you gave me like so-and-so email address. I just want to check, you know, the last time we spoke, like you redirected me to this person, but I haven't heard any reply back from them, blah, blah, blah. And most of the times, brands are quite responsive with that. They would be like, oh, yeah, they would be like, oh, the person filling that role has already changed or something like that. Or, you know what, I'll circle back to you. Or like, that happens, you know, like they actually will talk to the other counterpart and they'll be like, oh, so-and-so actually, it's kind of interesting. You know? So you never know.
Yeah,
you never know. You just have to shoot your shot. So
I love that tip. It's like, if you want to create social media related content, then you better leverage social media to be able to reach those brands. Like, you know, it's a full circle. So I love that. And it's also,
and sometimes like
compared to emails, depending it can be a bit overwhelming. I think social media DMs, these are a good way to slide into the brand and just make your presence felt a little bit. I like that. So Em, tell me, like, I know that whenever we are approaching brands, especially for social media related work, there is this expectation of having a solid media kit. And it's, you know, it's such a plus when you attach it or you share it, it shows that you're professional or maybe that you're confident, you know exactly how this is going to roll. Did you have that? And does everybody need to have one? And what did that include? Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I didn't have media kit until maybe recently. Like, I mean, most of the brands that I work with, they probably, if it's an agency, they already filter me through, I don't know, many things, and they know who I am already. Because I warmed their pitch already, right? So they know, and then they follow me and they know like my audience. So they feel more trusting toward me in that sense. But I know having a media kit will be useful because it shows them like your breakdown of your audience, who your followers are, where they're from. Because sometimes when you work with a local or regional brand, that matters to them because they want to specifically speak to specific audience, right? But in my opinion, like, it's not always necessary just because when you attach yourself to media kit, which is a number, right? Sometimes the relationship with the brand becomes transactional. So what I meant by that is because, like, you know, media kits is filled with numbers, right? The numbers of engagement rate, the numbers of followers, the numbers of your reach, the numbers, all these numbers.
True.
But it's really dangerous if you don't have that preliminary relationship with them without them understanding who you are as a person and they don't really warm up to you, then they just see you as numbers. So what's the difference between M. Amy and other person who have exact numbers? So it becomes kind of tricky. So I sometimes when a brand asks for, oh, can I have your media kit? Of course, I will give it to them. But I would also try to not like put, I know like some people like say, oh, put your pricing on the media kit. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing that,
Yeah, because yeah. I think this ties in so beautifully. You know how we always talk about pricing in food photography, and we always say never start with a number, never start your conversation. Yeah. Don't put out your prices up front, because then that's what the whole conversation is about. So it sounds like this is the same. You don't put out that number.
Exactly.
Yeah, you put yourself out first. Let them understand who you are.
Because then you're exactly. So just like when you're pitching as a photographer, you want them to trust you first, to understand who you are, to find a great fit before talking about the numbers, right? Because that is really important. So it's the same thing for me as a content creator and person who does sponsor posts and stuff like that, to do that as well, to build the relationship first on, other than like worrying about like, okay, should I get the job? Should I just accept this number? Should I do this number so that I get the job, you know? So yeah.
And has it ever happened that you've sent your media kit and they've been like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, that doesn't match a profile that we were looking for. Yeah, yeah.
That happens all the time. And I mean, like, as creatives, we are business person first. Then, you know, I think sometimes it's really hard for creative people to think that what we do is actually a business, right? So like, you have to think about it in a business sense that, well, of course, not all business can work together, you know, but it doesn't mean you cannot have like a cordial relationship. Like, if you cannot network, you can still do that. And sometimes, like, I don't know if this is true, though. Like, sometimes, like, when one agency like knock on my door, suddenly, like, there's so many other agencies that are knock on my door. I don't know if like somehow they share data or something.
They
like
do.
That. I'm not really sure about that, but it seems like,
Yes, I have heard this from other high profile content creators who do a ton of sponsored posts, that they definitely do. And this is an inside
data,
thing,
right?
100%. So if they have a good experience, or if they have a name that they would like to recommend, that name goes around. It happens in Singapore. It happened. I got one of my biggest clients through this system. An agency I had never worked with went and recommended me to another agency, and I went on to work with McCormick, just, you know, the biggest spice name in the world.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's just so.
Yeah. So this proves that even if that doesn't work out, right, your character shows, you know, your personality, who you are as a person, and how you conduct your business kind of like translates into the whole interaction, right? I guess they forward it to the next person that might be a match for you. So it's a win-win, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But tell me, like, okay, so you don't want to start with numbers. You don't want to have that conversation first. So which numbers matter? Like, I think the one thing that stops creators from reaching out to brands is the fact that they feel like they don't have enough followers. I don't have 100,000. I don't have 50,000. I don't have. So how do I even, you know, do I even fit into this bracket? Am I even eligible to apply kind of a thing? So what has been your experience? Do you think that social media presence, the number of followers, you know, that matters?
You know what? Having a larger following, I think like after maybe 10K, that would open up to many more brands. Obviously, you're going to have more exposure, right? But nowadays, you know, the algorithm always changes. Like, you can't even guarantee when you work with a brand that you will have certain number of your followers see your posts, right? So I feel like now, actually, brands are loving to work with smaller creators, because those are the creators who have deeper engagement with their followers, right? So I think there's a slight change in terms of like focus. Before, they were like, oh, I want exposure to everybody. But then now brands are getting smarter, especially I think after COVID, you know, like people are getting real with their life. It's not like about like, you know, the old way of advertising where here is a maple syrup, buy this, you know, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't anymore. Brand wants something that is relatable, and audience wants something that is relatable to them. Okay, how do and actually solve their problems. So nowadays, I feel there's a shift in that like, you know, there is an opportunity for everybody, even if you have like less than 1,000 followers, you know, shoot your shot, you never know. And if you still feel like, oh, I don't think I will have the chance, then you can probably creep the brands. You know, sometimes like when brands do a lot of partnership, they're tagged, right, on their social media.
Yeah.
And then you can go through like, okay, like I know some brands, they only exclusively do partnership with like macro influencer, but some other brands, they do like different, like, you know, they just wherever they feel fit, right? Like, mm-hmm, it's more like, mm-hmm. It's more like if like the person contents fit into their brands and they'll work with them. So you'll never know. So you can do a little stalking, you know, on Instagram and see like, oh, what kind of creators that I work with?
Yeah.
Then, you know.
That's part of the homework. Yeah. And that's part of the
homework. Yeah, that's part of the homework. Yeah.
You have to do that. Yeah. I mean, as much as you want to work with them, there has to be that fit. It has to be. Because sometimes we all dream of like, oh, let's work with McDonald's. But then when you work with McDonald's, you're like, you know, I don't know if I want to work with them again. So, and also like, the fit is so important. So basically what I'm hearing is one should not hold themselves back from reaching out, you know, no matter what your follower count is. You never know what the brand is looking for. Maybe they're not looking for that. They want, you know, the audience that you already have fits exactly what their ideal client looks like, and you're reaching them. So go for it and don't hold back.
Exactly.
Love it.
I want to add one more thing, actually, on that note. I think we sometimes get discouraged about like our numbers, you know, but actually our unique identity is each creators, they have different value proposition, right? Like you have your architecture background. For example, if you want to do like content creation or sponsorship in the future. So you can relay on that note with brands. So everybody has something to offer. So you shouldn't worry so much about the numbers, but maybe like enhance what you have and enhance your value proposition. So when you do pitch to the brand, they can see you. Oh, yeah, this person is actually unique. And I like to work with her. with him because, you know, you're only one you, and you speak to larger crowd or something like that.
Yeah. And as much as you're doing your homework about the brand, you also have to give them at least a little bit of what you would bring to the table for them. So it's not about praising yourself and saying how good you are, but it's about how you feel, why you feel there is a fit. I think that is also a huge part of it. And that kind of washes away the whole conversation around number, followers, you know, this is, like you said, this is the value that we're talking about. But when we started talking, Em, you said that you work with a lot of global brands and local brands. So how did that come about? Like, again, this is another inhibition that a lot of creators have that, oh, you know, I'm in this market. I'm in Singapore market and I should work with Asian spices and Asian brands because my reach is more in the Asian market. But, you know, to have that thinking that, no, you know, I can market for any brand, no matter where they are based. How did that happen for you? Did the global brand started approaching you or you broadened your horizons? And how did that work out?
So normally for global brands, they work with agencies, right? So they don't necessarily work themselves, so because they have a stricter procedures that they'll go through. So I think agencies normally doing the filtering, they find maybe specific things that they want to campaign for. And in this case, maybe because my niche is like quite unique, you know, I'm a third culture kid and I'm in Canada, and Canada is a very diverse country, like there's like the population, there's a lot of immigrants. So I think somehow my story speaks to the global brand, whatever they want to do within their marketing strategy in Canada, right? So yeah, in that sense, I feel like they find the fit in me. So I'm very lucky in that sense that I, like, for global brands, like the agency approached me first. I can't remember the time that I do, like, it feels like when you work with a global brand, it's harder to go through their filtering system. Like, you know, like when you actually pitch yourself, it feels like you need to know someone inside first. And once you know the agency, then they'll be, you know, on your retainer, like they know you, and then they start working again, as we speak about it before, like, you know, the agency kind of like forward your information to other agency. And then it's sort of like a chain reaction from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it might be a bit tough depending on what the brand is and whether there's an agency involved or not, but there's no reason why one shouldn't try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I find that especially for global brands, the effort needs to be almost more than just like commenting on their, like, you know, their Instagram or something like that. Sometimes, you know, when I do a personal project, I tag them, I'd be like, I genuinely like this brand, blah, blah, blah. And maybe it gets to their social media manager or something like that. And then they talk to their agency counterpart. Sometimes it happens like that, I feel. So this is basically telling you that you should just put out your work, you know, put it out there. You never know who's watching, right?
True, true. And also that there are some projects that are huge projects. You want those names. Then you've got to do a bit of heavy lifting. You've got to, not everything is the same cookie cutter approach. Like I approach this brand like this, so I'm going to approach this brand like this. It doesn't work like that. You've got to customize your approach based on the name. Wow, that's such a great point. I love it. This is a huge thing for people to kind of just open up to and understand that the effort for one brand is not the same as the effort for another brand. But how does it work? Like, what are the logistics? I'm always wondering about that because oftentimes global brands have this hesitation. Like it had happened with me. A huge Indian brand had approached me for a partnership. I remember when I just started out. And they said, oh, yeah, you're in Singapore. We can send you our products and da-da-da. And then suddenly something changed. And they were like, oh, but we don't really have a market. Our market is mostly India. So we'll be sending you your products. And coming back to India. Like there was this sudden change. And for them to suddenly feel like, oh, but our products are not available in Singapore. And this whole logistics issue became bigger than the kind of content that they would get from me. So we didn't go ahead with it. So have you ever run into this kind of an issue? Because you do have to use their products. I mean, you kind of have to showcase them and or create with them. So how does that work?
So like for global brands, there are two different kind of like partnership. I feel like I live in Canada and Canada and US is sort of like very closely, like, you know, we're border like neighbors. And like some products that are available in the US is not available in Canada, but I do have a client in the US that they know that like I have a significant amount of audience on my social media is from the US. So they're like, okay, why don't you create a content for us and, you know, still like sponsor it on your, on my social media, and they'll send everything like from the US. So it's on them. They'll take care of it, including the shipping and the taxes, sometimes, because you have to do like the duty, right?
Customs,
so they pay all the customs, they pay all the duties. So all that I know is like the products here and I work with it. And then on another side, there will be like global brands who have regional kind of like, for example, like, you know, hot sauces that is available all over the world, like big brand, you know, but then they have like their Canadian, because sometimes, you know, on Instagram, they'll have like a brand that is in Canada, a brand that is in US. So in that sense, then I will work with the Canadian counterpart and then they'll take care of it. Or if they work with the agency takes care of it. So I've run an issue where I'm supposed to have like a contract partnership with a brand. And then they figure out, they're in the US. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, but we need a quick turnaround. And they're like, well, we don't know how fast, like, you know, logistics to Canada. Sometimes that happens, right?
Yes.
So I guess depending on where you are in the world, like, I guess, like, because we are unique in terms of, like, Canada and US is kind of, like, very close.
Yes.
So maybe it's not as difficult, but maybe if you're somewhere else, it will be an issue. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I feel like in Asia, we are sometimes, it's a bit tough. I have worked with American brands and they have literally sent equipment all the way shipped from America and back, you know, we've done that kind of partnerships as well. So there are brands that are willing to do that and pay.
Yeah.
They want you on board. And there are brands who tell you like yogurt cups from India. So there are all sorts from, you know, that we come across. But from what I hear, it's very encouraging to hear what you're saying is that most of them, if they are willing to work with you, they would most definitely, you know, factor in the patent, factor in the taxes and, you know, have you on board no matter what it takes. So that's amazing. Tell me.
Yeah.
When we talk about sponsor posts, so we, you know, we've been talking about brand partnerships, content creation, sponsor posts, like these are all these terms that we've been using. And I've seen a certain kind of content that you create for clients under the realm of sponsored posts. But let's say that a photographer is out in the market, they want to work with a brand, and they say that I want to get paid for promoting a brand's product. Then what are their opportunities? Like, what would be the different kinds of content or services that they could offer under the whole realm of sponsored posts or partnership, you know, posts? What would be some of these services?
I don't know, like for me specifically, because I cook, so I do recipe development as well, right? So then you can offer that. Like sometimes, like if you're a photographer, or I can think that maybe showcasing the product in such a way, like product styling or food styling, you know, sometimes there are sponsorship that only requires people to see how the product looks in certain, you know, space. You know, if it's food, maybe like presenting it, you know, nicely in like a space, like where it's like decorated accordingly or something like that. It could be, I don't know. I think I feel like a post is kind of, it's a lot to deal with, right? Like you have to do captions, telling your stories, right? As a photographer, like you already have an advantage that you create visual stories basically. That's your advantage. So that is something definitely that you can offer. And I know like a lot of photographers, they have a certain aesthetic, right? That they can sell in a way. I like to present it in this way. And it will be appealing to brands because it might appeal to a certain types of audience, right? For example, you want to present like a certain product or food in a minimalistic way, or like in a fine dining type of way, then you have an eye for it, and then you have a way to tell the story in a way, right? So you could do that. I don't know what else though. Like,
yeah, basically what I'm hearing is
Another thing I just wrote down on my notes: a giveaway post.
Yes, I was gonna add that.
Yes. Everyone can do that, you know? Yes. Photographer or not, you can do that. But so like some photographer, you can do that giveaway post. Lifestyle inspo, or sometimes maybe you can highlight your experience. So it's not necessarily about
you mean a review? Would you say like a review?
Yeah, Well, I know like, you know, some photographers that is into like educating, like educations, and they do YouTube, like, you know, they're reviewing stuff. So you could probably do that for certain types of products, right? And sponsorships nowadays extends beyond just a post, right? You could do stories. Some people do like their daily activity and being sponsored by the brand, you know, doing daily stuff. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with you photographing stuff. It could just be part of your daily, like, you know, day in the studio. Oh, I use this stuff. I use that stuff, you know, and then.
And TikTok is very big on that. TikTok is very big on that. More than Instagram.
The behind the scenes.
Yes.
The behind the scenes, you know, like sometimes you don't know that these are sponsored posts because you just slowly like panning to the studio, looking at like, okay, this is how I work. This is like what I use. Yeah. And these are sponsored posts. So you never know that.
Yeah. So, you know, I love running and I follow, like, I don't follow, but I really binge watch swimming and running videos on Instagram. And it's amazing how a simple running video, you are like all caught up in how inspiring it is. What was their timing? Yeah. How did they run? But actually, it's a post about the shoes. Nike sent them.
It's very, exactly. It's unconscious. All this, like, contents.
And then you're suddenly like, she ran a half marathon in 2 hours. Yeah. So I'm going to, you know, go and get, not in 2 hours, but in 1 hour. And then, you know, you want to get those shoes because you think you run faster. So yeah, I totally get it. So I'm just going to summarize very quickly. So basically, when we talk about sponsorship with brands, sponsorship could come in different formats. So it could be a story format. It could be a reel, a post, or even a slightly long form video format. So those are different formats that we can think about. And within those formats, we can have so many different options. I think you mentioned that you can have different styles of posts. One is very product focused. One is a bit lifestyle. You could also do different versions of videos. Like, for example, you could do a nice lifestyle video, but you could also do a quick stop motion. And that becomes something exactly. fun and a different vibe. And for stories, mm-hmm. you could have, you know, more of that personal, like you said, a feedback or review, or maybe your experience of using cooking behind the scenes. You know, so there are so many ways that you can actually position your value or what you can bring to the table, you know, not just in terms of format, but also in terms of the styles within those format. That exactly. That is great, great information. So Em, tell me, now we're going to get into something that everyone's just been sitting at the edge of their seats to talk about. That, okay, yeah, fine, I can create a reel, I can create a story, but how do I get paid for it? And how much should I get paid for it, you know?
Right.
So let's talk about money.
Okay.
And money. I know, everybody's like, there's this applause in the background right now. I can hear some whistling, drum roll.
Yeah. So
how did you figure this out? Because this is like a service that you added a little bit later. So obviously you had a bit right. of idea that how much your photography was costing and what your rates were. But
yeah.
how did you figure out your pricing for social media related services? And maybe if you can also add some tips along the way on how photographers, you know, considering how brands are in today's climate, social media climate,
mm-hmm.
if you could also add some tips for the photographers today and how they can price their similar work. So that was part one of our conversation with Em, and tell me that you are absolutely loving it. Such a fabulous, fabulous conversation. I mean, right from understanding all about media kits to knowing whether and when to add these kind of services to your food photography business and whether you should add them or not, you know, to understanding how things are changing and whether you are eligible to work with big brands, small brands, local brands, global brands, whatever. There is so much good information that Em has left us with. And I cannot wait to bring part two to you, because that's where we will get all into pricing and we'll get into all the experiences and differentiation and tips on creating long-lasting relationships and retainer clients. There's so much more coming up in part two, but I hope you enjoyed part one and it has left you with some solid takeaways. You know, if you have any questions, you can always reach me at hello@myfoodlens.com or you can DM me on Instagram @Dyutama_myfoodlens. All right, I'll see you next week with another episode. Until then, bye-bye.